One of the things that Ajahn Chah learned in his travels was he saw that in the monasteries, what would often happen was that you have like a life cycle for a forest monastery. So typically what happens is you're a couple of months of wandering around the place, they'll find a village, they'll set up, they'll put their umbrellas in the forest, they'll sit under a mosquito net, and they'll meditate there for a while. Maybe eventually the lay people will say, please spend the rains here, they'll build a little bamboo kuti for them, they'll spend the rains. If they like it, they'll stay on after the rains. And eventually they make an arrangement with the villagers to allocate a certain amount of land for the monastery. They put up a wall around that, they build a sala, they build a kitchen. Gradually the thing will get more and more developed. And then if they have a charismatic teacher there, the teacher will start getting well known, attract more disciples. More and more disciples starting to come, and the place gets more and more built up. Eventually, at a certain point, it attracts the attention not just of the local villagers, but of often wealthier upper class people from Bangkok. This happens in Thailand all the time. And so ever since like the late 60s, early 70s, the Thai royal family has always supported the forest monasteries. So following that, then often you get the support from the wealthy people from Bangkok, so that means that the quality of buildings and infrastructure in the monastery goes up a whole another league. And then that lasts until the abbot dies. So until you've got the charismatic forest master who then passes away, and then they build a stupa for them, and then the stupa becomes a tourist attraction. All the tourist buses coming from Bangkok, all the monks who want to meditate go, and they go find another little patch of forest somewhere. Yeah? And then the whole thing starts again. Yeah? And so you have this cycle. It's a life cycle of forest monasteries, and it tends to be not more than one or two generations that a monastery remains as an actual serious place for practice. This is how the cycle tends to go in Thailand. And so Ajahn Chah saw this, and he noticed that one of the reasons for this was because of an excessive reliance upon the charismatic teacher, okay, which was very characteristic of the forest tradition. That they have. So Ajahn Chah tried to set things up in a different way. And so what he tried to do was to devolve authority from himself and grant authority to the other monks. And so, for example, Ajahn Chah would always be sending his monks away. He'd say, why do you want to stay with me? You know, it's a waste of time. You get out of here. You know, you've been here for too long. You're getting lazy. I noticed when I compared Wat Manachat with Bodhinyana was in Bodhinyana that there was much less appearance of unity, in the sense that there wasn't so much like everybody doing the same thing at the same time, right? Whereas with Manachat you had much more meetings, so you'll come into the meetings and it's formal and you're wearing your robes and you bow at the same time and you do the chanting at the same time. So there's much less appearance of that at Bodhinyana, but much greater reality of unity. The reality of the unity was much greater, although the appearance was much less. Yeah? And so that's something I found to be very interesting. And the reality of the unity came from the fact that basically everybody was there for the same reason. Yeah? And that they're all inspired by Ajahn Brahm's teachings, and that they really were there for the same reason to do the same thing. And so there was a very, very warm and very lovely feeling in the Sangha at Bodhinyana. And this is one of the things which, one of the qualities of Ajahn Brahm, which I really admire very much and which I try to learn from as best as I could. When I've come here and trying to set up a community at Santi Monastery, I guess these are the background that I come from. And so I guess what I've preserved from that training is I try to also keep a strong emphasis on Vinaya. And so we have tried to have good Vinaya practice here. As you know, I don't. I'm quite clear in terms of policy that Vinaya is Vinaya, and Thai and other cultural accretions are cultural matters. And that you should, you know, if you're in Thailand, you can use a receiving cloth or something like that. But we don't do those things here in Australia. So we make a distinction between Vinaya and the various cultural aspects, which is not to be disrespectful of those cultural things, but just to say, well, this is how we do things in Australia.